Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Being Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanrol, and I'll be your host today, filling in for Adjoa Boahidi. Today's guest is Dr. Mandy Kara, Chief Innovation Officer at Nuvo Ventures. We're discussing advancing health equity and innovation in value-based care system. To explore how value-based care, AI integration, and innovative care models can address health disparities, improve patient outcomes, and transform healthcare delivery. Dr. Kara, she is a visionary leader in healthcare transformation, and she's a chief innovation officer at Nuvo Ventures. With over 20 years of global experience, Dr. Kara is spearheading initiatives that deliver equitable, value-based care to undeserved populations, generating over $500 million in net value and improving healthcare for millions of patients across multiple markets. Dr. Kara has led large-scale innovations, including implementing technology-enabled solutions for population health management and driving operational excellence. She's also developed and executed learning programs that educated over 10,000 healthcare professionals, including physicians, clinicians, healthcare professionals, and C-suite executives in value-based care leadership and change management. So today we're excited to discuss Dr. Kara's insights on the future of healthcare, value-based care models, and the role of innovation in creating more equitable and effective healthcare systems. Welcome, Dr. Kara.
Great to be here. I wanted to applaud you for all the work that you're doing in connecting all the communities across industries and ensuring a common voice. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It's fantastic to have someone of your caliber. And, you know, to be honest, like it is fantastic to have these varying voices from different industries. And certainly healthcare is a very important one that many want to learn more about. And I think it's really interesting. We're going to dive into it in a second, but how AI and innovation is really also changing the landscape of healthcare. So before we begin getting into the main questions, we want to center around you as a human, right? We want to get to know you better. So we first start off with a couple Proust questions. Marcel Proust was an essayist and author, and he really believed that asking some of these questions really helped get to the essence and true character of someone. So I'm going to start with, which talent would you most like to have?
And that's a great question. I think what we value most as humans is to be understood profoundly. So it's really important to be profoundly understood in your relationships, at your work, in the communities that we live and serve. So I think the talent I would want really is the ability to understand people, understand their needs, their wants, their perspectives. I think that would make me a better designer of healthcare initiatives that would ensure that people's values and preferences are at the core of our systemic design. So I think that would be the talent I would love to have.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, this is the first time I'm hearing this particular talent. So amazing. It would be amazing to really, truly understand folks, right? So now we're going to go into another question. If you were to die, which is a little bit morbid, if you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Again, another quite interesting question. And I would say it probably would be river. So it aligns quite perfectly with my work and my life. The river is ever flowing. It enriches its banks. It connects communities. It ensures that people have resources and means to get to resources. So that sounds like a tremendous opportunity. So that's who I would want to be.
Health equity is at the core of your work. How can leaders integrate equitable practices into their strategies in a way that aligns with broader organizational goals?
Now, that's a great question. So my work spans sustainable transformation. It's all about ensuring that we have a human-centered approach, which is data-driven and ensures collaborative partnerships across the health ecosystem. Health equity is not just an ethical thing we do. It's just absolutely essential for high-performing systems. It's about building a system that works for everyone and not just some. I also think that health equity is not something which is an add-on component to the systems you built, to the programs you implemented. It is the foundational component of your health programs. Your health programs would be better if you thought about health equity from the get-go. So I think the actionable steps that we could all potentially kind of think about, the first one is data-driven insights. You know, data isn't just about numbers, though. There is a story behind numbers in healthcare, as in every industry. And the story talks about why that disparity occurs. Why did a certain segment of population did not access emergency visits as much as the others? Are there access issues, and what are those for? So exploring the opportunity to go behind the numbers and understanding the story helps you put together the foundational components for those programs. I think the other concept would be, once you have your data, both qualitative and quantitative, think about reimagining those programs from the ground up using a human-centered approach. And true innovation is not just about small adjustments to things that have not been working. It's all about rethinking the entire system. It's about innovating to really affect human experience for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing to think about is inclusive creativity in health equity, cultivating diverse teams that mimic sort of the communities that you serve. They can design better solutions because they understand the full scope of the challenge. You know, one of the concepts in sort of designing programs which are very equity focused or driven is the ecosystem approach. We talk a lot about social determinants of health. It's all about creating those partnerships within the communities because health doesn't start and stop in a hospital. Health exists within a school. Health exists in communities at home. So connecting all of those components together, ensuring that we have an ecosystem approach to our solutions is equally important. I think the final few are, you know, ensuring that we have accountability in what we do. So the difference between intent and impact is accountability. And so we need to measure goals, track our progress, and ensure that we remain transparent with our health equity goals.
Yeah, that's so true. And I mean, this really ties back to that, the latter part of the question around the organizational goals, right? Because a lot of organizations may have also specific metrics that they need to meet and essentially leverage, right? But it's important to keep not just track of innovation, but always kind of go back to how does this also tie back to the goals that we're looking to achieve. So fantastic.
Absolutely.
So you've spearheaded large-scale healthcare innovations. What insights from value-based care and population health can leaders in other sectors learn about driving meaningful change?
Yeah, there are a lot of transferable sort of, you know, learnings from value-based care and population health. So value-based care and population health is essentially focusing on pivoting healthcare from fee-for-service, an incremental sort of system, to a value-based system where we get paid when we improve outcomes, when patients actually get something meaningful out of the interactions with our healthcare system. So it's very outcome focused. And I think we came into it late as healthcare industry. In any other industry, the customers want convenience, affordability, transparency. Those are given in most industries. Where in healthcare, it was very transactional. You went to a doctor, you had an issue, you came back, the doctor got paid. We don't know if you're going to have a follow-up visit, or there's going to be sort of a system that makes sure that whatever that you were, you know, suffering from or whatever symptoms you had get resolved. And essentially, we prevent that from happening again. So there wasn't a system to do that. And I think the one major lesson is, focus on outcomes. True value lies in delivering outcomes and not just activities. Processes are really important, and activities associated to them are important, but it's about what you're trying to deliver and how you're going to deliver it. I think the second thing that we can learn is population health and value-based care are asking us to basically consider all the influencing factors in someone's life. So the things we call social determinants of health now, back in the day, it was just about the patient doesn't have transportation, doesn't have the right, nutritional services. And so the impact on their condition would be very limited. And so today, just having that holistic approach to design, holistic approach to ensuring everybody feels included, involved is critically important. And I would mention again, collaboration across sectors is a critical component to achieving these goals.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And, you know, I absolutely agree with everything that you're saying. When I did the intro for you just a moment ago, we talk a lot about innovation, right? That's something that's at the heart of the career that you've developed. So now that AI has kind of entered into the landscape, right? How is AI transforming patient care and operational efficiency in healthcare? And how can leaders harness AI's potential to enhance decision-making and improve strategic outcomes?
Yeah, there's a lot of conversation about AI, and rightfully so. We are at a very pivotal moment in technological advancements of our generation. I think the last advancement was more about information, ensuring that information was segregated and available to us. And you can think about applications like Google. And so we received information that was readily available and somebody produced and you could access it. Mm-hmm. And now the whole paradigm has shifted from not just gathering information which exists, but creating information that never existed before from the insights that exist today. So that's generative AI. We have seen applications in healthcare in AI. So AI is not new to healthcare. We've been doing predictive analytics for the longest time. It's part of our risk stratification algorithms. It's part of how we kind of stratify, segment, and also ensure which segments of population get what kind of services or interventions. So it's predictive analytics is part of AI, artificial intelligence, and it's not new. But the newness is in machine learning models, which are now able to take the unstructured data, which usually existed in our medical charts and notes, and nobody really knew where it was and what sense it made. We didn't have very clean data, and we in healthcare were unsure how to use that data. So we had massive amounts of data. Most of our data was unusable, and a lot of our data exists in our unstructured formats. So with machine learning application, for instance, we can actually identify different patterns, understand our populations a little better. And same, the applicability goes beyond that. With LLMs, for instance, we could improve patient engagement. There are so many possibilities, but how do you stop with all this?
Yeah.
It comes down to defining clear objectives that align with organizational goals. You don't want to just do AI because AI is cool. You want to do AI because you have set goals and you have set use cases. So you have identified use cases within your organization that clearly need help. And that could be your patient engagement. That could be your risk stratification model. Anything that needs massive improvement, that needs innovation, that's where we should start and build out those use cases. In fact, a lot of progress has been made at the government level to put out some strategic plans and use cases that our government is considering today. So those are the things we could also look at, research. And then secondly, once we have the use cases, we need to build strong data foundation. We need to understand that data is critical. We need to invest in clean, accessible data, which is interoperable. And then we get to the part where we are choosing the right AI models, and those models are based on our objectives and use cases. And additional thing I would say is it's really important to consider governance and ethics as mm-hmm. you're thinking about all of these things. I've set up committees, AI committees in the past. And so it's all about ensuring that you have a place for the key stakeholders that include clinicians, but also data scientists. And these individuals have a place to come and communicate and understand and collaborate and ensure ethical, transparent, and compliant deployment of AI models. So that is critically important as well. I think once you have chosen the right model that relates to your use case, you pilot that model and you continue to refine that model on a small scale. Because we want to always put patient at the center of our efforts. We want to make sure we do no harm to the patient. So it's really critical to understand how this model works and what refinements it needs for broader application. And then obviously measuring impact is critically important, using relevant KPIs to ensure that you're measuring impact and understanding if it's helpful. You know, technology alone doesn't drive change. It's how we apply it that makes the difference. Yeah. And lastly, I would say just foster AI literacy across the organization and not just in leadership and C-suite, which is critically important, but also at every level of your organization. Training is critically important for individuals to understand the different types of AI models and what they essentially can do for us. And AI exists to improve the processes so the human potential is freed up for more cognitive tasks, especially in healthcare, where it's all about connection and empathy and understanding and making sure our patients and their families are at the center of what we do. So I think
I love that. I love how you also shared, like, ultimately, you know, we're freeing ourselves up from mundane tasks, right? And it's really getting into the higher levels of thinking and kind of flexing our muscles in terms of being human and being empathetic and really understanding what are the problems that truly need to be solved and taking it from an inclusive standpoint. So I really value that. Yes. Okay, so moving on, you've also successfully implemented sustainable programs across diverse markets. Mm-hmm. What have you learned about creating scalable solutions in complex systems, and how might that apply to other industries as well? So first we talked a little bit about AI's potential, right? Now we're talking about how do you do this within scalable solutions, but within complex systems?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And you wouldn't find more complexity, or maybe you would, but I haven't seen more complexity than in healthcare. We stand to be a sort of, part of innovation because we are so fragmented, because we are so uncoordinated. If you have ever experienced the healthcare system as a consumer, you definitely can relate to what I'm talking about, because any time that I've accessed healthcare system, even today, being the insider to healthcare system, I've always come out thinking, wow, that was super fragmented. I had to call multiple times for my appointment. Mm-hmm. I had to personally ask for a follow-up visit. I had to advocate for myself. And what if somebody is not as educated, as aware? So should their experience be any different than mine is? And the answer today is yes, their experience is tremendously different. And we've made this healthcare system more and more convoluted by creating, programs that sit in silos and they don't connect the entire ecosystem. So I think the first component is having a human-centered approach. So really understanding what matters to people.
Yeah.
You know, what are their needs, preferences? What are you trying to solve for? What type of system would solve for it? And once you have done that work, because that's the critical work that needs to happen before you ever touch a design block or a design, design any kind of programs. The second one I would say is, you know, design with modularity and focus on adaptability. So, you know, we bring a Lego set.
Wait, let's say that again. Design with modularity and
built for adaptability.
Built for adaptability. I like that. That needs to go on a t-shirt and a billboard. Okay, so please continue on.
Yes, and I would say it's just like a Lego set, right? You bring a Lego set, and Lego set has some foundational blocks. You're going to use those blocks, and you can build the shape you want, and you could build any shape you want, really. But you have those foundational blocks that will still help you build what you want to build. And so these modular components are absolutely important for customization based on the markets you go into, because healthcare is very local. So every market has a slightly different population, different preferences, different ecosystem. And so you can't just say, I have designed an initiative or a program at a system level, and it should apply to 20 states and different populations. It just doesn't work. So, which is why designing with modular components for customization is critically important. The second is enabling infrastructure. Like, you really need to have robust supporting systems. And I'm talking about people, process, technology, training. Yeah. All these components need to exist, because that's what's going to end up helping you in scaling your programs. Once you've built them with modularity and adaptability in mind, that's what's going to help you scale it. And then data-driven iteration is critically important. Using feedback loops to constantly monitor, learn, and adapt all of your programs, not letting them be stagnant, because we are continuing to evolve. We are continuing to learn. For instance, AI, a lot of information has come through, and now we know more than we ever did. So we need to use this information to benefit our communities, benefit our patients. And so it's really important to continue to learn, continue to adapt. Empowered local teams would be another one. So healthcare and health is local. It's about the community that person lives in, the place they work, the type of neighborhood they live in, the neighborhood park that they visit, the grocery store, and the access to fresh, you know, food that is available to them. So healthcare and health is a very local thing. So we need to ensure that we have local teams that are empowered with autonomy and resources for local adaptation. Obviously, there are some centralized, key assets that we need to have as we scale solutions in complex systems, but we should never undermine the power of local teams that exist within the communities. And then it's all about fostering a mindset of growth, fostering a mindset shift, which says, I'm continuing to learn, and that's why I adapt. It doesn't mean that the program or initiative I designed is flawed or something. No. But you're getting this feedback loop, which is dictating how it needs to continue to evolve. And you just can't let go of that work. So I would say those are a few principles that have helped me, and I hope they help others as well.
Well, it definitely sounds like it's almost like there's mini startups happening within these ecosystems you speak of, because having come from, you know, an entrepreneurial background, I see it happen all the time within that world. I'm seeing it now more enabled with the ability for AI, right? You can learn, grow, iterate. It's fantastic. I can see the world evolving so rapidly through this.
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, one of your previous kind of ventures at Surround Care Academy. You emphasize the importance of training for effective value-based care. How can leaders leverage education and development to support transformational initiatives?
So this topic is very close to my heart as well. So I have been responsible primarily within multiple organizations for coming in and sort of building the infrastructure for value-based care and population health, scaling it, implementing it, configuring it in different markets. And very early on, and this goes back 12 years or so, when I started really the task of building population health initiatives and trying to scale them, I quickly realized that people, especially who were not corporate, really didn't understand what we were trying to do and how were they supposed to implement it, right? So the corporate has come up with this great scheme to kind of improve, heart failure readmissions in 22 states, but people in those states don't quite understand what this initiative is all about. What is it going to take from them to implement that initiative? So now, after having educated over 10,000 physicians, clinicians, healthcare professionals, and C-suite executives in sort of the concepts of value-based care, population health, team-based care, and leadership development to enhance our opportunities, I've just found that you just can't have sustainable value-based care without investing in your people. And that is what it comes down to. So I think with the key initiatives that I've built around education, they have all been aligned with the organizational goals. So aligning training with organizational goals, for instance, if I have developed a network integrity initiative to ensure that patients have access to the right resources within a network, it needs to align the training. I need to align the training to that initiative and make sure that organizational goals are met. The second thing I've found very, very helpful is to create a continuous learning model. It's not one time I go in and we are going to go live with an initiative or a program and I give some training and come out and I'm like, okay, you're on your own now. We just helped you. What we're going to do and good luck with this. We'll see you next year. And that model doesn't work. It's going to be a continuous learning model, which includes multiple modalities, including in-person, live virtual, and micro-learnings. And micro-learnings have been pivotal in the work that our teams and my teams have been able to do in essentially making sure that we fit into the lives of professionals. So a doctor who's seen patients all day cannot be expected to arrive at a hospital center in the evening and sit there and listen to a three-hour presentation on how to do value-based care. I think we need to make sure that we kind of get integrated into their life and not vice versa, and which is where micro learnings come in handy, which kind of we send out bite-sized education to, for instance, in this case, a physician, and he's driving to work. He can listen to that in his car. He can pick that up again during lunch when he's having a cup of coffee, if he wants to, if he desires, or on his ride back home. And so you kind of neatly fit into his lifestyle instead of just kind of forcing people to come to the central place and this is how we're going to educate. And those all have value too. There's value to all of that. There's a value to that collaboration, but I think it's really about ensuring that we are the ones who are making sure that our education is accessible and convenient, and we're reducing any kind of barriers to participation. I think practical application is critically important. Theory is great. Like, I could tell you about a lot about value-based care and population health and what it all does. But at the end of the day, you would really want me to help you understand how it applies to your work. So it's been a critical component of every training that we have designed is, how can you help? How can you apply this to your work today, doctor, today, nurse?
Yeah.
So what can you do today that's going to start the application of these principles into your work? That's really important. I think it's not just about the front line. People think about education as being very front line focused. We need to teach people how to do this. No, it's everyone. It's their leaders, their managers, it's the directors, the VPs, the SVPs, and the officers. So everybody needs to be educated and then become coaches and mentors for people who are looking at them for the leadership. And those are a few things that have helped. I think measuring is critically important too. We've made sure that for every training that I've had the opportunity to develop, we are measuring the impact of training and we're gathering feedback and, again, iteration of our training programs, ensuring that they can continue to scale and evolve as well.
Can I just follow up to that?
Yes.
So how are you typically doing that? Is it normally through surveys, or how do you tend to get the data you need that you're on the right path?
Yes. There are multiple ways, actually. The first, a very easy way, is when we design a program, we are essentially attaching a survey, which is sort of mandatory. So the person has to answer three questions before they can get out of the training. That quickly tells us, it's very quick. It will take them less than a second for each question of that sort. But it gives us a lot of data on did this education really apply to your work? Was the trainer, explaining things in the way that's a good format for you? And were we convenient enough for you? Like, did we fit into your life today? And so those things are really important. The second thing is, if the program is focused on, for instance, let's just say a value-based program, which is total cost of care, we want to control the total cost of care, reduce the total cost of care. We would have metrics that are associated with total cost of care tagged with that program, and we will measure those metrics in sort of an organizational dashboard to say this quarter, we had different metrics associated with these programs. Are we making an impact? When did L&D team go in? Or when did we start the L&D and the continuous learning? And let's look at that sort of the graph and see what type of improvement are we seeing? What type of curve are we seeing? Now, it's not very clean. This is not a controlled trial, but it definitely shares with us if we have made any changes or not. And I would say the third one comes directly from the teams. So the team managers and team leaders will provide us information that their teams were able to implement initiatives or navigate EMRs or, navigate their workflows effectively. If it's integrating technology, then those kind of initiatives, we can see if they have the ability and the expertise to navigate and do their work. And they would also send us a list of people who have not caught up yet. So it's the moment where we go in, and we sometimes call them remedial plans. We would go in and re-educate a segment of that team again and make sure that our training is more sort of, comprehensible to the audience. So these are three things we typically do. Well, we have seen tremendous sort of alignment with sort of our outcomes. At a population level, we've seen, as we educate and continue the learning process, it immediately starts to show effect in various metrics. So that's a key for us.
It's so great. I think what I'm really picking up on is how everything that you do, you had that human-centric element to even... If you are looking to measure, you have the care and thought process around who are these individuals and how are they going to be able to, do this easily, right?
Yes.
So everything that you're kind of implementing, you do it with such care for the humans that you're stewarding ultimately, which is fantastic.
Thank you.
All right.
Yes.
So, in your experience, how have you been able to balance long-term resilience with immediate operational goals, especially when navigating significant industry shifts?
Yeah, no, that's really, really great question, because, when you have operational challenges, there's really a strong sense of urgency. And you don't want to be focusing on anything else but that. The fires, we used to call them the fires, and we still do. We have so many fires to put out today, so many operational things, because operations is very, although it's supposed to be very systematic and we should have a plan for everything that goes wrong, there are so many unexpected turns that might happen that actually takes you away from this. Sometimes it takes you away from that long-term planning that is critical to your organization's success and transformation and longevity, to be honest. So a lot of things that we do is, one is strategic foresight and strategic planning, critical components at the very get-go. You should have your most organizations do have a strategic plan done for the year and very specific goals that helps you stay on track with long-term goals while ensuring that operational challenges are accounted for. And then I would just go back to say, you know, anytime that you have sort of you're working on your long-term goals, you should kind of take into account what is operationally different today and ensure agile adaptation and iteration into your processes. You can't say, I just built a strategic plan 6 months ago, but it's not, it needs to be happening exactly the way that we imagined. That is not true in any context. You need to continually adapt and evolve and say, okay, I thought this would work, but it's not quite working.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing some changes in the environment. I'm seeing CMS and now some initiatives, and there's political change today. So how do I make sure that I'm still going to be able to provide the services I need to provide to individuals long-term while making sure that I am accommodating for today? So that's really important. The resource allocation and prioritization is critical. So not everything can be a priority. So sometimes I've worked in organizations where teams would say, it seems like everything is a priority. And if you have that problem, then that's a huge problem. We should all know what's our priority number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we should ensure that we have resources allocated accordingly. I would also say communication is absolutely critical in building a resilient organization. All of our goals, our strategic plans, if we haven't communicated very effectively at every level in the organization, we are probably not going to see the results that we want to see. So that's really important. And I will finish that one with metrics and measurement. Super critical to building resilient organization is knowing what you want to do, how you're going to do it, and how you're going to measure success. And that's critical.
Yes, absolutely. So we're coming towards the tail end of, you know, our podcast session, right? And I want to ask a question. There is one last personal question that we're going to get to, but the question that I have right now is really around looking ahead, right? In terms of emerging trends or innovations, what do you feel is going to be kind of top of mind as we look to the future in terms of trends?
No, that's a great question. And the top of mind, and I think the things that leaders should definitely pay attention to, the type of skills as leaders that we're going to need to have in the transformation moving forward. I think human-centered AI is going to be critical. And with that, I mean the AI that helps us amplify the human capabilities, especially in the systems within healthcare. That's critical. I think we need to have a whole new level of data fluency and systems thinking embedded within our sort of leadership. We need to understand data in a very different way. We have now access to more than we ever had in a very different way than we've had. And we need to make sure that we are using the data in the most effective ways. You know, the old command and control model is probably obsolete at this point. And I think the empowerment of teams and iteration are the future. I also think we have to go back to thinking that people seek purpose and not just paychecks. So people, you know, have goals beyond themselves, like they are above and beyond them. They want to serve communities, but they want to serve people. How are we as leaders going to empower and ensure purpose-driven leadership? And I think we need to understand that transformation, and I've understood it for a long time, that transformation is not one person work. It's not even the C-suite or executive leadership work. It needs distributed leadership at all levels. You need to ensure that you're building leaders at all levels of your organizations with the right resources and the right mindset, and that's going to lead to transformation. I think today there's so much that we can do with technology. And so in tech-driven world, human connection is more valuable than ever. So focusing on the key things that we actually were not able to do, which is, you know, physicians were and clinicians are still inundated with administrative tasks. So they don't have the opportunity to connect with patients as much. to practice, you know, empathy, emotional intelligence, the key assets that we have as humans, I think it's time to go back to our values. It's time to revisit our values and let all this noise be taken care of by human-centric AI or technology design principles, and ensure that we are focused on continuous learning and growth. Information is becoming readily available and accessible, but the right type of information for the right type of person, that comes from a very clear intention of ensuring that people have the right training and continuous learning and growth. And finally, I would say, I think it's time for us all to focus on well-being and for our communities, for our patients, for our providers, but for ourselves as well as leaders, ensuring that we are focusing on our well-being so that we can be better contributors to our environment.
Hear, hear. I couldn't say it better, right? Especially being part of the Employee Well-Being Council. Mm-hmm. Very last question. If you were to give yourself, your younger self, a piece of advice, what would it be?
Yeah, great question again. I think it's, you know, early on as a young professional, you know, when I would start on some kind of initiative or work project, I would really want it to go perfect. I would want to design it and have it happen real perfect. And it never did. So there is a space between the thing that you dream about, the thing that you've designed, and the outcome you want to achieve with it. There's a whole messy middle space. And I think we need to embrace that messy middle space. And I didn't embrace it quite a bit. I was, I think, resistant to the messy middle, which was uncertain, which is, you know, I didn't quite understand how things were, you know, moving, or if they shifted from what we thought was going to happen, how much distress that would bring. And I know, and I see that even today as a struggle in organizations, where what we thought about and what our vision was, if it's not exactly, you know, how it turned out to be, maybe it turned out to be better. And as long as it met the objectives and the barring the outcomes that we're looking for, I think we just need to embrace the messy middle. That's where the growth is. That's where we truly find who we are.
It's true, right? It's like embracing the journey.
Yes.
You know, it's not necessarily the destination, but the journey we need to enjoy along the way, and kind of like look up and smell the roses, right?
Exactly.
Like, wow, we've climbed this far. Okay, we still have a ways to go, but hey, we've climbed this far. It's kind of nice. It might be a little bit messy. There might be a little bit of rubble behind you, but you know, it's good. I really, Mandy, thank you so much. This has been such a pleasure getting to know you on the podcast. On behalf of the Employee Wellbeing Council, we truly want to thank you for your time today.
No, thank you so much. I had such a great time talking with you, Tyagi, and really applaud again. I would say it again. Applaud the effort that you're making in connecting different voices from different industries and ensuring that our lessons are shared. Thank you.
Oh, amazing.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.